This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
It's Friday.
Welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We thank you for joining us. Sorry about yesterday's show. We had to run a rerun because I got stuck in some high waters. Which
we were just talking about that the day before, too.
Which we're going to, I'll tell that story next week because I've got a guest in the studio today. I want to devote as much time as possible.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we will have Bud Pierce rescheduled. I was really looking forward to having Bud on. So we thank him for being willing to come in. We'll get him rescheduled. Welcome to Friday here at Newsmakers. In the studio today, one of the legislators in here in Salem, I really have been looking forward to having on to talk because she is special. We have State Representative Denise Bowles in the studio. And by special, I mean that she's a Republican. She's a suburban legislative, really. There's some rural also in her district, District 19, but right here in Salem. And and she's a freshman. She's got a lot of perspectives that we should all try to learn from. So, Denise, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
So many things to talk about. And before you leave, we're going to have to schedule you for the next time because I know it's just going to be the tip of the iceberg.
Okay.
First of all, let's let everybody know who you are. So you live here, you've lived here and raised a family in Salem. You live in Marion County.
I do.
And you have a real job.
I do. So I represent House District 19, which is portions of South and East Marion County, or South and East Salem, Almsville, Turner, South Marion County. I have literally lived in that district almost my entire life. And I went to schools here. I went to Judson. I went to Sprague. I left the state of Oregon because, you know, when you're 18 years old, you're ready to go conquer the world. And I went to school in Seattle, spent some time living overseas, other parts of the state. But lo and behold, probably, I don't know, 6 or 8 years after that, I ended up meeting and marrying another Sprague graduate. Mm-hmm. And we moved back here together almost 25 years ago, and we have started our family, raised three kids through the school system here, been involved in our community, hold jobs, work, you know, just do what you want to be doing. It's been a great place to raise a family.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know you and I have known each other for a number of years in a variety of ways because we kind of live in the same community. And that's what's awesome about Salem is that there's kind of 6 degrees of separation for all of us.
Oh, so. I think Salem is a 1 degree of separation town, really. Pretty funny. So you've been, even though you call yourself a freshman legislator, this is the third time you've actually gotten to serve, and you're no stranger to politics in Marion County.
No, that's
you've
true.
You've involved a long time.
They call me a redshirt freshman.
I love that.
But I did just win my first election in November, and this is my first long session as a legislator, and it has been a different experience. One of the exciting parts about there are 10 people in the Republican House caucus that won their first election in November. And as you know, there's only 22 of us altogether. So almost half of us are we're figuring this out. And it's pretty intense. I mean, the pressures and the process at the legislature right now is something I've never experienced before.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. So we're talking to Denise Bowles, Republican Representative District 19. Why do you think it is that there's so many new Republican representatives? Did the old guard give up? Was it just coincidence? Or why is almost half the caucus a freshman?
You know, I honestly don't know. I don't think there was any specific thing that created that situation. I think it's a combination of people have been serving for a long time and we're ready to move on and do other things. It is tough to be a Republican in the state of Oregon.
Uh-huh. Yeah, depending on what part of the state you're in, right?
especially, I think some of our more suburban and valley districts are becoming much more competitive and it's a lot of, it really, quite honestly, it's a lot of work. It's a lot more than I think I expected going into this, but it is still an amazing experience to know that I represent 69,000 people in my community.
Wow. All right, 69,000 people. So here's the thing, is that you are a quote-unquote citizen legislator, as Oregon has been founded, and you have a real-time, full-time job. And how can you possibly balance that in a long session like this?
Well, I think for, you know, you have this the support of your employers or or good staff that help run your business. Or, I'm not the only one. There's people within my freshman caucus, you know, there are people who run their own companies that and they bring other others in. For me, I work at Salem Health. I do community relations. I have a very limited schedule right now with them. They're very accommodating, and so you have a little bit of fluidity. So that's kind of how I make it work. But it's a lot of balls to keep in the air.
Well, then we should give kudos and a thank you to Salem Health for being flexible.
Absolutely.
And sharing the talents of Denise Bowles with us in terms so that she can, you know, serve her district.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I wanted to say one other thing on the citizen legislature, because people ask me, well, you still have your other job. And I think it's important, if you can pull it off, to continue to work and be engaged in the community that you're representing. It makes me a better mm-hmm. legislator. The Capitol is a unique place, and in my opinion, there are too many people there that this is what they do, and they lose that connectivity to how the policies actually impact everyday Oregonians.
Yes, that's just reverberating in my head. I don't know about you, Dave.
Yeah, I've been thinking that a long time.
There's too many people in the building that this is what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can think of several.
Perspective. Yeah. All right. So, how has the battle? You said it feels like it's more work than you anticipated. There's so many bills. There's got to be incredible amounts of reading and screening. You have some staff people to help you with that, and then there's communications and there's meetings and.
Tell us
about that.
So we started the legislative session in the middle of January, and just for the. For the people who are tuning in here, just to let you know some of the political dynamics that really drive the conversation every single day. So I'm serving the House, and there are 38 Democrats and there are 22 Republicans. And I say that's significant is because in order to raise revenue or raise taxes in the state of Oregon, you have to have what they call a supermajority, which is a 36. Yeah. And so the House, there's a supermajority in the House, and there's also a supermajority in the Senate, and then, of course, Governor Brown. So the Democrats are in charge of every part of this legislative process. And the only real thing, it's been a while since the House has been in a supermajority position, and I think it's really been negative for the state of Oregon, because what happens is we don't have any negotiating power. Very, very little. There are very few tools in our toolbox to make, you know, when you have a piece of legislation. I mean, I came to the legislature because I wanted to represent my community. I'm good at working with people. I can get along with people from across the aisle, have different walks of life. And I think we can wrestle through issues and figure out where we're going to land. But that has not been my experience, really, this session, because there's really no reason to have intense conversations with a freshman Republican legislator in the House. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on my relationships. And I mean, and there's a lot of that. And there's a lot of things we agree on. It's not this intense partisanship all the time. But, you know, most of my committees have a 7-4 split. And so actually, we don't even have to show up to committee and they still have quorum. So and they can pass legislation. We do show up because there's a lot of things that we want to put on the record and talk and point out. And we do that, I think, well. But so you're constantly thinking through each piece of legislation. You know, what's the impact here? What do we need to get on the record? How do we, you know, need to get, where do we need to go from here? And there's been a few small little successes, but in general, it's kind of getting steamrolled Yeah. Every single day.
So you don't feel like you're making a difference, even if you're voicing your opinion to it.
I can't say I'm not making a difference. At the very least, I've been irritating.
Ah, nice.
getting under people's skin. I joke when I speak with some of the schools and some of the kids that I talk to that I was not formally diagnosed, but in hindsight, completely an ADHD, strong-willed kid that liked to mess with people. And I think I might have found my vocation because that is exactly what I get to do every day in the legislature.
Nice. All right, straight out of the mouth of Denise Bowles, District 19 Republican legislator. And we're going to talk a lot more with her and try to talk about the process and what she thinks is wrong with it this term and whether or not the Democrats are overreaching and if that's going to swing back and whether or not the legislature is making statewide solutions for metro issues. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on Newsmakers, and we are delighted to have in studio with us our state representative from District 19, Denise Bowles, and we're trying to talk what it is like at this. I mean, we should all know what it's like. I would love to just even hear what your schedule is like, but in terms of you have to show up in early morning meetings, right?
Yeah.
And there are caucus meetings, there are hearings, there are floor sessions. What does a typical day look like? Are they different depending on the day of the week?
You know, they are different depending on the day of the week. But I serve on four policy committees. I'm on the House Committee on Healthcare, House Committee on Business and Labor. I'm on the Rules Committee, which it's kind of where all the legislation gets dumped that doesn't meet the deadline that we just had this week as far as things, you know, and it's with the majority leader, the Republican leader, a lot of really important people in the Capitol, and then me. So I'm not sure exactly if it was a gift or a setup, but for whatever reason, I am on the Rules Committee. And then I also serve on the Committee on Capitol Culture, which is a joint committee with the Senate that was created this session to deal with the sexual harassment issues that seem to plague the Capitol. It's a pretty busy agenda. So my days, basically, I start several days a week. I have committee at 8 a.m., go from 8 to 10, then I have caucus from 10 to 11, then we have floor from 11 to 12 or 12:30, and then we grab some lunch, and then I have 15-minute meetings for 2 hours. So I sit down with 8 to 10 people between 1 and 3, mm-hmm. and then I go into another round of committee meetings, and on Wednesdays I have a third committee that starts at 5:30 and goes till 7.
So those meetings are those with the lobbyists and or citizens, right?
Yeah. So associations, people that come in. I mean, I have a kind of a pecking order in my office. If you are a constituent, you always get in as soon as possible. I think it's awesome when people come to the Capitol, and some of them come, you know, they've been there before. Some of them, it's their first time, but I'm happy to sit down and talk about any issue that you would like to talk about. And, you know, lobbyists will come and talk to me just about, you know, legislation that's coming up to my committees, and they provide a lot of good information. You have to meet with a number of them so you can get a full picture of what you're actually talking about. But, you know, people, you know, ding lobbyists a lot. You just have to but they provide a lot of good information. Mm-hmm. And when we're going through hundreds of pieces of bill, you know, hundreds of bills through all the committees, it's quite a lot. But it is super interesting. I mean, I learn all kinds of things that I never thought I'd need
Indeed,
to know about.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm glad you're on that Capitol Culture thing so you can learn to stop harassing all the male interns. That would be, that's really bad form, Denise.
See how I'm not commenting at all?
Yeah, right.
The Capitol Culture Committee, to me, I know it's important, but it's basic behavior that we all learned when we were growing up. So,
All right, so Democrats control this. All this legislation pouring through. You were talking before the show about how many bills are getting jammed through. Can you give us a picture of how you feel about the process has been in this session as far as getting things going and through committee and onto the floor?
Sure. It started pretty early for me in my committees because what typically happens in a committee is there's a piece of legislation, people come in, they testify, you know, in favor of it, against it. There's panels of people that come forward, and I believe that it's my job to ask questions during the committee process in order to make sure I have the information to make a good decision.
Yeah.
And there's been a number of times where I was either, not just me personally, but we were not allowed to ask questions. I was cut off in asking a question by my committee chair, which led to another kind of interesting political situation because I just didn't take that very well. And so I think that I am a pretty strong advocate, and I think that doing my job for my community is to be able to weigh in and say things and ask questions. And so personally, when that gets interrupted, I will pitch a little bit of a fit. And depending on how that gets resolved, I'll keep going up the food chain. And I've had some pretty successful results in changing the process to be a little bit more fair.
Good. So. Good. That is so important. Dave, a lot of listeners know I served on the city council for 4 years. Sometimes you're asking that question because a constituent asked you to ask the question.
Right.
Because there's knowledge that you want to be on the public record. It's really important. It doesn't necessarily mean that Representative Bowles wants to drive this agenda, wants to make this outcome or this or that, but she does. Right? Is this fair? Am I putting word in your mouth? So she absolutely has the right to ask the questions so that the information is available to more people in the room.
Sure.
You know, and if you have too many pieces of legislation on the agenda in order to evaluate them in a fair and a measured way, that is not my fault or my problem. and that's as of Sunday this week. So for your listeners, midnight of Tuesday of this week, all the legislation needed to move out of policy committees. And there's a few exceptions, but by and large, by earlier this week, that's what had to happen. I saw on Sunday that there were still over 350 pieces of legislation that still needed to be heard and moved in 2 days.
Wow.
And so we moved them, and it was fast and furious. And actually, I got to a point that if there was a piece of legislation that I was being asked to vote on that I had heard the first committee hearing that morning, I voted no, because it is irresponsible to move legislation forward that we were not able to discuss and debate in our policy committee, because that's what the policy committees are there for.
Yeah, unless, of course, it's Obamacare. Then you can move that without reading it.
Right, yeah.
A little historical humor there.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good for you. I applaud you on your effort there to try and stop some of the stuff that's being rammed down. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, the political process is just being railroaded, like you said.
And here's why, because I'm glad you're there. I want to say that. And so thank you for serving. And hopefully in 2 years, you're going to want to do it again. But how they vote ends up on somebody's postcard, right? And it's ridiculous. You have to be so much more astute as a voter when these postcards come and say, Representative Bowles did this, Representative so-and-so, Senator so-and-so. Mm-hmm. You really have to get further into than just that bold print on a postcard, right?
Absolutely.
Do you have the option of voting or abstaining?
No.
Really? So you can't. So you're voting no because you don't know the contents of the legislation, and it may have been something you support, but ultimately someone's going to say, well, she voted down, you know, feeding school children, or she voted down, you know, safety buffers.
But those are already in progress. I mean, those are already installed, so.
Yeah, I'm not completely unaware of political positioning that goes on in the Capitol. So I'm very cognizant of that, and that can impact some of, you know, my thought processes and such, just because of the postcard. I'll give you a really good example. And I actually wasn't able to vote on this legislation because I was out of the building one day for a medical situation in my family. But there was a bill, and it was in the newspapers about how the legislature shut down fracking on the Oregon coast for 10 years.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah. There was no fracking going on or soon to be going on or going on at all in the next 10 years. That, in my opinion, was purely a piece of legislation to get votes on, to send to the district a beautiful picture of the Oregon coast with an oil well that Representative so-and-so supports, you know, destroying our Oregon coast. And so there are bills like that, but the bill absolutely did not do anything. It did not stop fracking. I mean, it says it stops fracking, but it wasn't a problem. There was no problem being solved.
So why would they waste their time doing that? Political fodder?
There's political reasons for things. And so you're constantly, especially being in districts that are they're going to be politically fought hard for, you have to pay attention and see, you know, what's happening. And so there are legislation that goes through that I don't want to put motivations in other people's, but there's a lot of political.
Do you feel it's wasting your time? Wasting sometimes, everybody's time.
Sometimes, sure. Wow.
So let's talk again about the supermajority and the process and how it's going through. Because they're reaching into people's gun rights and into their wallets and into their families, into the medical decisions and into so on and so forth, right? So what kind of feedback are you getting? Because you have this suburban district, mm-hmm. relative, and suburban and rural mix. Right?
Yes.
So you're representing people who are registered in all different parties.
Absolutely.
What are you hearing back as far as are they happy with what's going on?
You know, people, I mentioned to you, I had a town hall earlier this week that I thought 8 or 10 people would show up to, and there were over 30 people. And that has been consistent. People are very concerned in my community about the cumulative effects on the tax increases that are coming down the pike, the cap and trade issues that both pro and against. I mean, we have, you know, that environmental positions that there should be no change to the cap and trade legislation. There are now 60 amendments on it. The gun bills that are coming through the Senate right now have people, I mean, I get emails every day now and some texts for people who have my phone number to walk, to leave the Capitol over some of these issues. So we are really fighting for some common ground here. And it's permeating the people in this state, I think, that the legislature is maybe a little bit unhinged.
All right. We're going to come back and talk about whether or not they're overreaching and some of these other issues coming out of Portland. You're listening to Newsmakers. Our guest, Denise Bowles from District 19, a state representative. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly sponsored by Hamlin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and in our office today, in our studio.
Office.
This is our office. Our office has microphones. Denise Bowles, State Representative, District 19. So if you weren't not aware, she did serve as a legislator twice before, as appointed person.
Only once before.
And then she got elected in
you
November.
You can speak up and correct him. Yeah. Feel free.
Never let the host get do an incorrect.
Yeah, right.
An alternative fact. Don't let the host state any alternative facts, right? Anyway, okay, let's do a quick hit on some of the bills and some of the things that are going through. One of the things we're talking about in Newsmakers is that maybe a supermajority party, a one-party legislature, is going to tend to overreach. It's going to tend to say, well, yes, I'm a Democrat, but I'm not a Democrat like you need. You can pass any tax whatsoever and still get my support. Is there an overreach when it comes to cap and trade or the proposed business taxes?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to make that call right now, but from what I am seeing, you know, people come in and talk to me on different pieces of legislation, which maybe by itself seems you know, we could find somewhere to work on that. But when you start looking at things from a cumulative standpoint and the broad impact that it's going to have on, you know, on our businesses and our communities, it quite honestly is can be really terrifying. About, I don't know, 7 or 10 days ago, I was sitting in a committee and listening to a series of pieces of legislation. And in my head, I thought, they're actually going to run all this stuff. Like for the last, you know, couple months, you kind of thought, all right, they'll, you know, some things will rise to the top and we'll get to maybe something that we can manage. But if some of these proposals continue to make it all the way through this legislature, I think we're going to see a very, very different Oregon than we are comfortable with. And I know that sounds a little bit like the sky is falling. And those who know me know that I try to find the upside in anything and don't want to overreach and over exaggerate. But just the sheer enormity of things, you know, there's $5.7 billion on the table right now for revenue raising. In addition, those are extra $5.7 billion to where we currently are. That's an enormous amount of money. And taking that out of our economy and putting it into government with what I believe is some very but the oversight and the questions on efficiencies and all the things that we as Republicans like to talk about, haven't been able to see that kind of intensity on the Democrats to make sure that's all in order as well. And so you have agencies that are growing exponentially in power and in funds, and I'm not quite sure where that is going to land. And, you know, and just back on the cap and trade thing, I have great conversations with people on a variety of points of view when it comes to environmental issues. And I think we as Oregonians love our environment and love our way of life, and we all have personal responsibility in that. But the direction that this bill right now has over 60 amendments to it, trying to figure out how to make it work. And I'm not sure I think the intentions for some people are good, but you know, clean energy jobs, that's great. But when I've asked for, do those jobs exist? Can we move people from one job? You know, if we deindustrialize the state of Oregon, can we move them directly into a clean energy job? No, we cannot. I mean, I drive an electric car, and I am driving up to Mount Hood this week, and I'm having to borrow a car from somebody, one of my kids, because there's no electric charging stations on Mount Hood where I'm going. We don't have an infrastructure. And so, you know, I'm not tone deaf to this conversation, but we need to make it work in the real world. And I think those types of conversations, I don't see happening in a really positive way in the legislature right now.
60 amendments on cap and trade. You're saying how to make it work. Does how to make it work mean how do we get it passed, or does how to make it really function for most Oregonians?
I don't think the passing part of it, I think it's how to make it function for Oregonians. And I think the reality of some of the implications of this legislation is starting to hit even the biggest champion in that capital. And I can only hope that that is actually happening. They're really seriously looking at this conversation, because it will make our state, in my opinion, very, very uncompetitive in the global market.
Please tell me it doesn't include cow farting and stuff like that, right?
Well,
please tell me it doesn't.
Maybe we can get some
amendments.
Because
there's no way to limit that or regulate that. Or
we can have AOC come in and write some amendments for us.
Oh, my God.
All right. So the thing that's terrifying for me is to have a one-party legislature, right? And the fact that you and Senator Thatcher are considered two dying breeds of people that represent a suburban area and who are Republicans.
Hey,
if we lose you
I'm
guys,
not dying yet. I just turned 50. I have 50 more years to go.
50 more years of destroying the planet with your CO2 emissions.
That's right.
No, but my concern is we may wake up someday and only have Republicans elected from rural areas. And then we're really being, all the public policy is being driven by metro issues. Of those 300 bills they're throwing at you and all these things, like, wow, they're really, how many of those really have to do with issues in the Portland market that don't need to have a statewide solution?
You know, that is a really great statement. And just to remind you, the 300 bills were only 24 hours worth of hearing bills. There's over 3,000 that have been introduced and are moving through this process. But I digress. Yes.
May I interrupt you there?
Yeah. Wow.
Who thought that was a great idea? Would that be the Speaker of the House?
Actually, interestingly, the Speaker would like to limit the bills because it just makes it problematic for running the place. I don't believe in that either. I think that if, you know, a lot of times bills get introduced because someone in your community wants to see something happen, and you work with them and you get a bill introduced. It's pretty standard. It has been for years. They don't all get hearings. They don't all get moved. But back to your original question about the Portland metro area driving policy in the state, that's absolutely the truth. And in some ways, being generous, I think that some of the policy drivers, they literally do not understand a different way of life. You know, if you live in Portland and you grew up in Portland, and it makes sense to ride your bike to get to work, and, you know, and when someone comes in and says, we need to limit, you know, your ability and tax your gas so you don't drive your car, I ask, how do you get from Vail to Ontario in the snow? You know, back on me on my electric car, I can tell you when it snowed, we didn't drive the electric car, we drove the Yukon. So clearly my family is not pure in this, but, you know, and we have this little joke about how cap and trade only works in sun.
True.
Because there's just a lot of things. So there's a way of life where you don't understand what it's like to drive hundreds of miles and not see anything. You know, a store.
Right.
And I'm concerned about the impact that's going to have on our rural Oregon and really on the valley and our farm and our agriculture industries, because, you know, Amazon delivers groceries, but they still use a truck to get it there.
Yeah. Amen. So, boy, so many things. The rural and urban divide. And it's the same parallel I had this short conversation on Facebook with people that they don't understand a small state perspective if they're a large state. Californians, and what was interesting to me, because I made this comment, and it had to do with the Electoral College, and everybody who liked it lives in a small electoral state,
yeah.
And everybody who said that doesn't make any sense lived in California.
Right.
So they don't understand.
Or the Senate.
Or the...
Here in Oregon.
Yeah. Okay, do you find that, they're trying to understand the issues in John Day, or that they're trying to learn, or they have their own agenda, they ram it through? And following to that, or connected to that, are they being respectful enough of the other party, meaning your party, and your perspectives and your public policy goals?
I think they think they're trying to understand, some of them. Not to be a them and us, but that's kind of how it feels a lot of the time. The issues are, you know, the Oregon government spends a lot of time passing legislation so that if you as an individual don't make a good choice, then we're going to make it for you and we're going to mandate it statewide. And that is very clear to me. So I think that if you make the value decision that the majority party wants you to make, then, you know, they'll leave you alone. But there are so many things that are driven out of statewide assessments and mandates, and, you know, just, you know, we just passed, or the city of Salem passed the plastic bag ban here in this community, and we are facing a vote on that probably in the next week or two for a statewide plastic bag ban. And I talked about that in my newsletter this week and just kind of put it out there as a question to people. Is this working? Is this not working? You know, my family, you know, we try to make good decisions. I did the beach cleanup. I see the effects of plastic bags. Now, the question is, do I decide as a family we're going to go this direction and be responsible citizens if we determine that's the direction to go to, versus the government telling me you're going to do this? And that's, you know, I think that I should use reusable bags. So sometimes I leave them in my car, yes. But I get a little bit irritated with every day, we don't like your choices, so we're going to choose for you. And I think that is a very real thing that's happening in the legislature. And I think citizens need to pay attention, because I hear from them, and they are as bad as irritated by that kind of attitude as I am.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We have same thing at city council. And it circles back to the supermajority, the one-party state, where they're literally listening to people that think that we need to make the choice about whether or not Dave Bourne drives a car and what the gas mileage is and whether or not you're biking or taking transit, because we want you to be miserable in your car because we believe that's the choice everyone should make.
That's true.
What's scary.
It is.
We have to have a counterbalance to that because, I don't know.
So I'm a very independent person, and I'm all about freedom, and that's what drives my decision-making process.
Okay. Good for you. Good for you.
Real quickly, I don't want to run out of time.
Less than a minute.
How do people get your newsletter? If they want to sign up and hear your perspectives on what's going on, how can they sign up for that?
Sure. You can shoot me an email at the legislature, which is rep.denisebowles@oregonlegislature.gov. I know it's really short, isn't it? Look on my Facebook. My Facebook page for House District 19. We post it there. And just going to Oregon Gov Delivery. Pretty much every legislator has something that you can sign up for and get. And we send it out about once a week.
Okay. Well, it's really important that you're there. And Denise, by the way, is D-E-N-Y-C.
Correct.
In case you have a hard time finding that on Facebook. And Bowles is B-O-L-E-S.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to have to go. We're going to talk to the Salem Kaiser Volcanoes again to finish our Friday. But this is the state representative, so important, representing District 19. Thank you for being there.
Thanks for
sharing
me.
The time. And please come back and tell us what we need to be frightened about.
Okay.
All right.
Right.
Denise Bowles, thanks for joining us. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back, folks. Thanks for joining us and finishing your lunch hour, your last lunch hour of the week before we go home
right,
for the weekend.
Right, it's Friday.
Right?
Brent,
why don't everybody just take the rest of the weekend
Friday.
Off? Prepare to go see a baseball game or something.
Oh, I look forward to that so
it's
much.
It's almost time, guys. So actually, today at the stadium, Corbin University is playing a doubleheader.
Awesome. This is Mitch is here in the studio with us from the Salem Kaiser Volcanoes, and he's been telling us every Friday about all the exciting changes out there, the events that are happening there, all the cultural changes. The family atmosphere, the new food, all these things.
The new paint job.
So Corbin's out there. They're playing some baseball out there.
Nice.
Occasionally you get once a year. Don't you have a Civil War out there?
Last year they came. They're taking a couple years off.
Okay.
Oregon State used to do three games with the Portland Pilots. Mm-hmm. We'd get one game. They get one at OSU, and they get one up at Hillsboro Hops. That number went down to two. The reason that we were the odd man out is because the Hops have a beautiful artificial turf, and you can play on that pretty much 12 months a year, where our grass is, you can't. Right now, you try to slide to get a center field hit, you're going to tear up the grass. So we're waiting for this rainy season to get through so our field can dry out, and so Crater Rick, our groundskeeper, can get that field in tip-top shape, ready for the Giants to come.
That is cool. So we talked last week a little bit about your Fan Fest, right? 2019 Fan Fest is just coming up in a few weeks.
It is, and we're putting a lot of effort into this. We have a lot of things going on. First and foremost, Warren's going to be there doing a live remote from 11 to 1 on Saturday, May 11th, which is very cool. We also have a couple of former Major League players, Tony Turcotto and Joe Patterson, and a guy named Daniel Turpin. You might not know this name. He did not make it to the show, but from the first grade on, every single year, him and Joe Patterson played Little League, high school, and McMinnville High School. They both signed with Oregon State, 4 years there. They both got drafted by the Giants, both got assigned here. They played Double A together. And at that point, I think their lives split off, and Joe Patterson went and made it to the majors with the Giants and with the Arizona Diamondbacks. But they're still friends to this day. They're both going to be there telling their story. We're going to have Q&A with the players. We're going to have free samples from all of our new concession partners like Bahama Mama Shaved Ice, Southpaw's Pizza, Cafe Yum, El Patron Mexican Grill, Barbecue Nation. So there's five so far that we've signed. We're still looking at one to two more to come inside the stadium, but they will be there sending out samples. We're going to have face painting. We're going to have our speed pitch machine going. We're going to have, for the first time in May ever, I believe, we're going to have single game tickets on sale starting on May 11th. You don't have to wait until June 1st. And I think they've waited till June to do that before. We're kind of forcing the issue and starting 3 weeks earlier. So you can actually come down and buy a ticket to like July 4th, which is going to be an absolute sellout. Major League quality sound system you can check out. National Anthem auditions, which we chatted about last week. Brent, I think you need to come down and do this again.
Oh, I'll do it.
We will have auditions with a new sound system. We're going to have a clearance table with up to 90% off on a bunch of our swag that we've had. Photos with the official San Francisco Giants car. If you haven't seen it, it drives around. A guy named Gary Mahorny, who is now an employee of ours, has this car that's decked out in Giants. The Giants orange, the logos, everything.
I want one of those.
Kind of freaky. Yeah. And then all kinds of prizes and giveaways. It's just going to be a lot of fun.
So the new food vendors are going to be there.
Yes, giving out samples. They're not going to be open to sell like a full plate, but just giving samples, a little chumming on what they're going to be offering at the stadium this year. And that's just really exciting.
So you said interviews with the players. Is there a team selected by then? Has the draft already happened by then?
No, I think the first week in July, I believe, is when the draft is.
Well, June.
So June, I'm sorry. Yeah. A lot of the players are still taking geography and math tests right now.
Right.
So we don't know.
I do want to talk about the players. And we talked so much about the visitor experience in the last few weeks, and being, you know, we've got a listener out there who's a baseball junkie like Dave and I, right? So the things that happen between the white lines is really fun, and even seeing how the teams get selected. Maybe next week you can come talk about
that. Let's do that. Like, let's talk
about
the
draft happens and who decides. Of course, we know it's the Giants that decides who goes between the white lines, right? So that's their personnel and their players, and it's in their farm system. But, you know, who you're going to get, what the makeup is, how many kids are coming to the community. They typically stay with people in the community, correct?
They do. And actually, that's something else that we want to talk about today. We are actually looking for a handful of host families. Every year, there's a little bit of turnover. Everyone tries it for a year. Sometimes they do it forever. Mayor Kathy has been doing this for a number of years, and will continue to do it this year. But we're looking for a handful of families that maybe have kids, maybe don't have kids. It's a great opportunity to bring in somebody from either United States or a different culture. It's great role models for your kids. You have a professional athlete living in your house. You basically have to have a bed mm-hmm. for them to sleep in, transportation to get them to and from the ballpark, and that's about it. We have some other criteria, but we can worry about that later. If you're interested, you can just call the ballpark, and we'll put you in touch with the person that handles all that.
When you say transportation, that means a vehicle available to them or rides available to them?
Well, not necessarily a vehicle, but yeah, rides, just being able to take them to and from the ballpark. Some of the guys use Uber on occasion, but just someone that can make sure that they're given the right transportation, healthy meal for breakfast. We take care of them for their pregame meal and postgame meal, the Giants do. But just a healthy breakfast, get them to the ballpark, and a bed to sleep in with a shower, and you know, you're good to go.
Fresh clothes.
They bring those, I believe.
Yeah,
they get to wear approximately the same thing every day.
That's right.
And these are young men between the ages of, 19 and 25, maybe?
Very, very young. Yeah. If you're older, chances are you're not at this level. Hopefully, by this time, you're somewhere higher.
Yeah.
But you never can tell what kind of curveball life's going to throw you. So, yeah, all kinds of ages. But next year, I'll come with some actual metrics for you about the team, how it's selected, what kind of kids we're going to get, where they are right now. Maybe they're at a location right now, but I'll bring you all kinds of stuff next week.
All right. Nice. The Fan Fest is May 11th. I got to put this on my calendar. Free parking.
Free parking, it's free admission.
Free to come in.
And face painting, Brett. Yep.
And face painting.
I think so.
They get the Giants logo on the face and it stays for a couple of weeks, right? They get this. Can we get some henna tattoos? Thanks for being here. We'll see you again next Friday.
Have a great weekend.
Everybody have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.